The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Lots to get to. We're going to be joined in just a little bit by Shaka Hislop, Frank LaBeouf, and Ian Dark to cover everything from Shaka's power rankings to Arsenal's performance against Crystal Palace. But we start in Spain. Semifinals, to be exact, of the Spanish Super Cup. Athletic Bilbao pulling the upset over Real Madrid. Couple first-half goals from Raul Garcia. A late strike from Karim Benzema cut the lead in half, but Real Madrid unable to overcome the deficit, denying us an El Clásico on Sunday between Real Madrid and Barcelona for the Spanish Super Cup. We're joined now by Ale Moreno and Julian Laran. Ale, I'll start with you. What happened to Madrid today? There were huge stretches of this match where it almost felt like they didn't want to be there.
Well, what happened is for Athletic Bilbao, this became an important competition, whereas for Real Madrid, at times, yeah, they looked disinterested, certainly in the first half. And then when you are disinterested, even if you don't mean to be so, you start making silly mistakes. And in the case of Lucas Vazquez, who has been very good for this team and very consistent for Zinedine Zidane, tonight was a difficult match, and that's an understatement. His turnover leads to the first goal. He catches the team absolutely completely stretched and out of position. When you turn the ball over like that and everybody's stretched and trying to make the field wider, that means that the spaces in between the defenders are much bigger, and that's why Raul Garcia popped in and scored the first goal. And then, worse than that, I suppose, is the fact that he doubles down on the mistake and then takes down a player for a penalty kick. Raul Garcia scores that one as well. So a tough match for Lucas Vazquez, but it's not the only player that had a tough match. Eden Hazard, my goodness. My goodness, the struggles for this guy are real. And we are going to focus on him simply because of the expectation that there is an Eden Hazard at some point becoming a difference maker for this team. And it's just not happening. And if you were ever to picture a guy that is lacking confidence, a player of the level of Eden Hazard and lacking confidence, go to the 28th minute of this game where there is a ball that is played in behind. Good movement of the ball by Eden Hazard. He's now through on goal. There's a direct path for him to go towards goal. The closest defender to him is maybe 5 yards away. He never takes a touch towards goal. Takes a touch to the outside and then cuts the ball back to no one in particular. And you sense this guy right now does not believe in his ability. And when you see that from Eden Hazard, that's the part that is really concerning, because it's no longer about fitness and it's no longer about trusting his body. It's now about the fact that he doesn't quite trust himself as a player. That needs to change.
And Jules, if there was ever a match where Real Madrid needed Hazard, needed somebody to make something happen to break through, this was in. It's not for a shortage of opportunities from Zidane. Hazard keeps getting these starts and yet no production.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I can see why. And as he explained after the game, Zidane about Hazard saying, you know, we have to be patient. He's lost confidence that will come back with a goal and an assist. The assist almost came in that second half. That was a great move for Asensio, who hit the post. And it was a good pass, a good cross, good cut back from Hazard. But there's something missing clearly there. But again, I think a bit like against Osasuna, when we debriefed the game with Ali, we have to talk about Zidane's choices and tactical choices. And in terms of personnel, I don't understand why you play the same team again when you've been so average against Osasuna a few days ago. I don't understand why there's not a few changes there. At least at the start of the game, he changed Varane and Nacho at halftime, but this will be it. Lucas Vazquez, I'm sorry, but a club like Real Madrid should never have a right winger as a backup right back. This should not happen, not in a club like this. You let Hakimi go because you didn't really believe in him, especially defensively, no problem. But you need a backup there for Carvajal. You can't have Lucas Vazquez, who's a right winger and has always played right winger, to play in a right back. He can cover for one game or two maybe, but when it's for too long, there's a problem there, and we've seen that this season. And again, why is Karim Benzema coming off? I'm sorry, there's 2 minutes to go in normal time, plus, as we saw, 6 minutes of added time. Why are you taking him off? Why? You play the Copa del Rey next game. You don't need to rest him for anything. Leave him until the end. He was your most threatening player, and he just scored a goal as well. So there's a lot of things that I'm really struggling to understand from Zidane tonight.
Ale, you agree with Jules? How much of this is on the manager?
In the part in which he repeats the starting 11, that's difficult to explain from Zidane's perspective, to be honest with you. I can't quite defend that. And I think one of the changes that he made, even within having the same player personnel, is that he started Hazard in a more central position rather than coming from a wider area. Well, that's catering to the fact that Eden Hazard doesn't want any duels, is not taking advantage of 1v1 situations, so he's just going to go inside and combine. But when he goes inside, he gets lost. Marco Asensio became the player that was most dangerous and most likely to hurt Athletic Bilbao in the second half. And where I totally agree with Julian is the fact that if you were picturing that somebody was going to score a goal for Real Madrid late, it's either a header by Sergio Ramos, which he almost did, or something that falls to Karim Benzema. Everybody else, you don't really trust that they're going to be able to score that big goal. And so when Mariano steps on the field and the camera takes a while to kind of picture or give us a picture as to who's coming up, and then you see that it's Benzema that's coming up, my first reaction is, well, he must be injured. There must be something wrong physically with him, because otherwise this doesn't make any sense. You leave that guy out there and you trust that he's going to do something special for you, because there's nobody else that you can trust. Who are you going to lean on? Are you telling me that Vinicius is going to be the guy who's going to score the big goal? I don't think so. Marco Asensio was active, but he hit the post here, the crossbar there. Is he going to score the big goal? Nah, I don't think so. Where's it going to come from if not from Karim Benzema and if not from Sergio Ramos? That's a question that we've asked time after time after time. And more times than not, Benzema has come through. More times than not, Sergio Ramos has come through. But when they're not the ones scoring the goals, I don't know where it's coming from.
Jules, why is it that this team always seems to step up when their back's against the wall, but not when it's not that way?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was very much sort of like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde again to now. We've seen that often this season. Sometimes, usually they start really well and then they sort of fade away, or they kind of want to control the game and some stop playing, like we saw against Elche, for example. It's really strange. I don't know if they can't keep the same intensity for all 90 minutes. If Ali is right, maybe tonight they started so poorly because they were not really into it, which, again, I'm not sure is forgivable for a team like Real Madrid, even if it's only the Super Cup. I don't know, but there's clearly something there that Zidane and the players have to rectify, because when you come to much bigger games later in the season, in the Champions League, and in that title race with Atleti, you would need to be able to rectify that, because otherwise you'd have more games like tonight where you're so bad in the first half that you can't come back into the game in the second half, even if you play much better.
Ale, they're not a consistent enough team, are they, to challenge Atleti at this point?
And I thought that they would be. I thought after they beat Atletico Madrid, and in the manner in which they beat Atletico Madrid, I have come on the show and said, you know what? I feel like this Real Madrid can catch Atletico Madrid and can get ahead of them as well. There was a certain show of strength, of personality there against Atletico Madrid that we didn't see from Atletico Madrid. Atletico Madrid actually backed off from Real Madrid, backed off from the fight. And that, I thought, okay, this is the moment in which Real Madrid really finds this consistency. And they did for a couple of weeks. But then we've gone back to what you just alluded to, and it's the fact that there are games in which they show up and it's kind of like, you know what, guys, not today, not for us, not right now, not feeling it, don't really think so. And you can't have that when you've been trailing the whole year to Atletico Madrid. You have to be at your very best, or at the very least, make sure that you get 3 points at a time in La Liga competition so that you're putting pressure on Atletico Madrid, because the one time that you put pressure on Atletico Madrid took a step back, and that was in the head-to-head matchup. I thought there would be consistency, and there hasn't been. That's disappointing from a player's perspective, but it's also disappointing from a coaching perspective as well.
Other news for Real Madrid, of course, they'll see Luka Jovic head on a rest of season loan back to Eintracht Frankfurt. Jules, this after the club paid 60 million euros for him. In honor of Luka Jovic, we had you build your worst Real Madrid transfers of all time. Where does Jovic fit into this list?
Well, it's quite high rep because, you know, it might not all be his fault and his responsibility, and there might be a few factors why he flopped so much at Real Madrid, but he has to be right up there with the Jonathan Woodgate, with the Julien Faubert, with the Royce Tondrente. I mean, I picked five first, and then we decided to go to 10. I could have gone to 15 easily. There's some on the list that are more known to than others. But he has to be there, and it's a shame because he was so good with Frankfurt when they had that really good season in the league and in the Europa League. Before the move, he was wanted by loads of clubs. He decided to go to Real Madrid, and I think in many ways we all saw, okay, this is a different profile to Karim Benzema, this can work. And again, whether it's on him, a bit on Zidane, a bit on the club, the environment, the expectation, the pressure, I'm not sure why, but what's for sure is that he was a big flop, yeah.
Alan, no Hazard, no James, no Kaká on Jules' list. Did he miss anybody else?
How about Somanelka? He wasn't great for Real Madrid. And here's another name of a player who's still around, and that is Danilo. Danilo, who continues to go on big team after big team after big team, and it's Real Madrid, and it's Manchester City, and it's Juventus. And you're thinking, boy, I'd like to be his agent, because this guy's selling smoke. This guy, whatever he's selling, they're buying. In terms of Anelka, a disappointment. And in terms of Kaká, I think you say the biggest, perhaps, transfer bust because of the expectation that there was of Kaká coming to Real Madrid and what he had been with Milan, the best player in the world. Never, because of injuries and other circumstances, never, nowhere near that with Real Madrid.
I got to say, Jules, I was surprised you left Kaká off that list.
I know. To be fair, I did think about long. Same with James and same with Anelka. I mean, I feel Anelka, in many ways, won you that Champions League. And just for that, he doesn't deserve to be on that list. James had, especially one amazing season where him and Cristiano were just outstanding together. One of the most lethal partnership in Europe that year. And for Kaká, Yeah, you're right. There's a good case for him to be on that list, although those are really, I mean, they were really terrible. Kaká had his moments with Real Madrid under a Real Madrid shirt. But you're right, the expectations were so high for what he brought. The difference is quite big, and maybe just for that, he could have been on that list.
Jules, on today's performance alone, why isn't Eden Hazard on that list?
Because, and again, we discussed that before the show, I understand everything. And I'm a bit biased because I like the guy and a lot, and I know him, and he's a great guy. And I think, I really believe he's an incredible talent. However, it's not his fault if he spends 80% of his time at Real Madrid injured. That's not Hazard. That's not his fault. And I think it's really harsh and hard to judge someone, especially in that matter of like big flops and big failures and players who were terrible for the club when he spent most of the time injured when it was not his fault. So that's why he's not on there. If he comes back and plays injury free for a whole year and he's more like we saw today or like against Osasuna, then okay, we can talk again. But right now, after all that injured time, I think it's really unfair to put him on that list.
Ale, what do you think about Jules taking care of his buddy Eden?
Just a reminder. This injury situation from Eden Hazard that Julian says is not his fault started with him coming to Real Madrid out of shape. It came with him coming to Real Madrid with his body not taken care of. So the foundation was never there for Eden Hazard to be fully fit. And that's on him, on the professional, on the guy that is supposed to go on this big transfer. The first moment you show up there, you show up flying because that's what is expected of you. He wasn't fit to begin with, and then everything has followed. But those cracks in the foundation, they came from Eden Hazard. They didn't come from anybody else.
Jules, last word.
But at Chelsea, it was the same for every summer at Chelsea, and he never got the degree of injury that he got at Real Madrid. And by the way, the big injury is Thomas Meunier against PSG, who almost broke his ankle. That's not his fault, or if he had too many chips in the summer when he was back home in Belgium.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So are you telling me, Julian, that this is simply from experience? When you come into camp and you're ready to go and your body's ready, you trust yourself to be able to do your job. Ahead of that injury that you just mentioned, It's not like Eden Hazard was flying. It's not like he was playing great. It's not like he wasn't heavily criticized. He was already on the wrong path. And that's my point. You go to Real Madrid, you get on the right path. You have to do that from the very beginning. If you go down the wrong path and then everything happens afterwards, it's something that you brought on yourself. Yes, there's been some misfortune, but he started on the wrong path, and that's on him.
All right, we're done with this segment. Real Madrid's time in the Super Cup done as well. The final on Sunday, Barcelona and Athletic Bilbao.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Just the one match in the English top flight then on Thursday. Arsenal at home, scoreless draw against Crystal Palace with a chance to move into the top 10. That despite Arsenal dominating possession throughout the match. For more, we're joined by Frank Leboeuf, Shaka Hislop, and Ian Darka. Ian, I'll start with you. How should Arsenal fans feel about this performance? They had a lion's share of possession, but in the end couldn't get the 3 points.
Yeah, and Crystal Palace were the better team in the first half. They hit the bar. Leno had to make a really good save from Benteke. Crystal Palace, very well organised. I mean, this was the side that let in 7 the other week against Liverpool, but they've got their mojo back now and they got a point. Arsenal, I think they lacked fire. They lacked the spark that they've had lately. They were trying to make it 4 wins on the bounce, but it didn't, truthfully, look like it was going to happen. It looked what it was, really, a mid-table game. Sad to say that for Arsenal, but they're still 8 points off the top four.
Shock, almost 70% possession for Arsenal in this match. Why aren't they more dangerous?
Listen, I think a lot of those players are lacking in confidence, even though they're kind of finding their shape, and Saka continues to be as good as he has all season. Smith Rowe has added something to this team. But I think it's a bit concerning when Aubameyang, for all his huffing and puffing, can't find himself in goal-scoring positions. And when opportunities drop to Lacazette, at times today at least, it felt as though he left his shooting boots home. He found himself in good positions, I do say, but at times just a little bit slow to pull the trigger. And then when he did, just a little bit off the mark. In the end, this felt like a nil-nil, probably from about the 55th minute.
Frank, Shaka mentions Aubameyang. Where was he today?
Well, nowhere near it, I would say. You know, I think Shaka mentioned that he was the best signing during the summertime because he was free and should have gone to any other club. And everybody was pleased, and I was with Shaka in that matter. But he proved us wrong in a way that since the beginning of the season, or mostly of it, we don't see the Aubameyang of the last season and the season before. So very disappointed. I know he has quality. I know he's going to get his confidence back. It's up to Arteta to keep on making him the captain of the Gunners still, and giving him the chance to be in the first 11. Aubameyang has quality. He showed it during his career. He's going to be back. But when? I don't have the answer.
Ian, at one point we were asking, what's the basement for this Arsenal team? Could they possibly be relegated? I'll ask you now, after the recent good form and just the draw today, what's their ceiling? Is it top 10? Is it top 6? Is it top 4?
Well, this is a strange season, isn't it, with the players operating in such an alien environment at the moment. I think it is affecting the games. It affects the players. They're members of the human race like the rest of us. I don't think it's predictable this season at all. I think strange things have happened. Strange things will happen. Their aim is still to finish in the top four, but they'd need a heck of a run from this point where they are. I mean, tonight I thought they missed Kieran Tierney on the left-hand side to give them some thrust down there. He's been in brilliant form, and he was a big miss, I think, tonight. One of the reasons they couldn't really open Crystal Palace up. But, you know, they've not given themselves too much room for error because of the start they made. So it's odds against. They will get into the top four argument, but that will be the aim. Relegation, no, they're not going to get involved in that. Not at all.
All right, let's push on to Spurs, of course. A disappointing 1-1 draw against Fulham on Wednesday. Jose Mourinho with some interesting comments after the match. He did admit, actually, that in the second half, Fulham played better and more than Spurs, said the goal was completely avoidable, that they surrendered. But here's the quote that's got everybody talking. Quote, there are things that are individual. There are things that are individual qualities and individual mistakes. Basically, I cannot say much more than that. Ian, I'll start with you. Yesterday's show, we were all pointing the finger at Jose Mourinho for Spurs' poor performance against Fulham. Here it seems like he's pointing his finger at his players. What do you make of it?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time, because he's thrown a few players under the bus in recent years, especially at Manchester United. To be fair, he wasn't naming any names, which is, I think, why he didn't go any further. But there is a big problem, I think, for Tottenham. And I don't think they'd be getting away with it quite so much if the crowds were in. That they're getting into the lead-in games, and then they're trying to sit on it. That's what's happened. That's what they did again against Fulham. Five times this season now, they've led at half-time, and it's ended up as a draw. And it did again. Fulham deserved the draw as well. So that's 10 points down the drain. So I'd like to see Tottenham get on the front foot a little bit more. I know Jose's trying to make them a mean machine. They've got to a League Cup final. That's all great. But I think they can be more attacking than they are.
Frank, Spurs clearly aren't closing out games. Is that down to Jose Mourinho's tactics or the players, as Mourinho's now suggesting?
It's for me more about Mourinho's tactics, you know, where you want to wait in order to get some counter-attack, which is the best tool that the Spurs have and they use the most. But in order to get the counter-attack, you have to drop a little bit, wait for the opponent to attack you, and you go for a risk. And this is what happened, and this is why maybe they concede goal. Yesterday I thought the first half, Tottenham did well. They played well. They were leading the game, and they even scored a goal after that. And nothing to say much about the tactic and the way they were playing. But suddenly they dropped a little bit, also a bit physically, because when you don't have the ball, you have to run after it, and it's more tiring than when you have the ball. And I think Guardiola just explained that, and I was mentioning it yesterday. But yeah, that's the main point for me. If you defend and you want to defend because you want to attract the opponent in order to counterattack them, you open some doors to concede goals. And this may be why they concede goals mostly in the second half, and they mostly draw for games like that, for example.
Well, guys, we've been talking a lot of penalties of late, specifically how many Manchester United get. Jurgen Klopp has weighed in. A former Premier League official, Mark Clattenburg, weighing in. Now, he wrote this for the Daily Mail. Quote, Jurgen Klopp is wrong to suggest there's an aura around United that seems them get favorable decisions. There used to be when Fergie was there, but that has eased massively since he left. I'm the only referee to give three penalties to the opposition at Old Trafford, and that was for Liverpool of all teams in 2014. But David Moyes was manager. I'm not sure that would have happened when Fergie was there. Shaka, this is something you've been screaming about for quite some time. What do you make of Clattenburg's admission?
I find it astonishing, in all honesty, that a referee as highly thought of as Mark Clattenburg comes out and admits that against certain clubs, or more to the point here, against certain managers, there are calls that he would or would not make. In all honesty, the article in its entirety is an incredible thing. He speaks for an age about players diving and who needs to do this and who should do that and how many dives and how many penalties he reviewed. And then almost as a throwaway line, at the end he says, well, when Sir Alex Ferguson was there, I'm not sure I would have given some of the calls that I did after he left. And I mean, you rely on referees for impartiality, for their interpretation of certain incidents. As a player who played for smaller clubs for the majority of my career, it's something that I felt big clubs benefited from an awful lot. Big clubs would tell you otherwise, but now all of a sudden, the bastions of impartiality, the guardians of the game and the referees coming out and saying exactly that. What chance do you have here? I mean, this... I don't know where to start or how to end in my criticism around this.
Frank, from a player's perspective, what do you think when you see these comments from a former referee?
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because even in the rules of the FIFA, the UEFA, and all domestic championship, you have a question mark about referees' impartiality. Why a referee belonging to a city and why a referee supporting a team couldn't ref those team or this city? It's because there is a doubt of impartiality. It's because we think that it could be partial and dishonest towards the opponent. That's why, that's just human. So I don't doubt that Klattenberg did his best to ref all during all his career. But I'm sure he had a favorite team, he was under pressure, and sometimes maybe he did something that he didn't want to do, like many of his teammates.
Ian, does Klattenberg come off looking bad to you in all this?
I think he was trying to make a point about the mind games between Jurgen Klopp and Manchester United ahead of the big game on Sunday. But the boys are right. That's quite a revelation. I think it's been quite well known in the game that Sir Alex Ferguson was, how can I put this, quite good at using the magnetism of his personality. He knew that referees wanted to do big games at Manchester United to get those key assignments at Old Trafford. And I think he was quite clever, really, in just subtly, I think it's a bit more nuanced than it, the referees being biased or anything like that, but when they came to Old Trafford and they were refereeing there for the first time, I think, let's put it this way, Sir Alex Ferguson was aware of that fact. So do teams get a raw deal when they go to Old Trafford? I don't think they do these days, but perhaps in that era, people would say they might have done.
Shaka, final word to you.
Here's the other thing to this. Mark Klattenberg refereed the 2016 Champions League final, I just looked it up, between Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid. If he admits that he changes his interpretation of certain incidents to benefit big clubs or charismatic managers, if you dig Diego Simeone and Atletico Madrid, given that you lost that Champions League final on penalties, you're now wondering, well, I wonder what would have happened if we had a referee who was just totally neutral. Now you're reviewing everything that happened in the 120 minutes of that Champions League final and questioning every single one of Klattenberg's decisions.
Fair enough, we'll leave it there for now. Plenty of big games coming up this weekend, including the aforementioned Liverpool and Manchester United. We will be all over that on tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Make sure to join us.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
It's Thursday. You know what that means. The return of Shaka Hislop's power rankings. There you see it. A new number one and some big boys left out. Bayern Munich has dropped out. Liverpool for a second straight week, not in Shaka's top 10. Shaka's back. So are Ale and Ian Dark. All right, Shaka, explain yourself. How did we get Rangers to number one?
I'm not sure, Seb. I think I just set my bar for the power rankings too high. And now all of a sudden, I'm struggling to live up to my own expectations. I struggled. I admit, I struggled. Right? Let's walk through it. Feyenoord, joint top in the Eredivisie, 10. Besiktas, back to winning ways, 9. PSG left silverware in the cup. Well done, Mauricio Pochettino. AC Milan, beaten Torino twice. Once in the league, once in the cup. They're in back in at 7. Juventus are in at 6. After all kinds of noise last week. Porto 5. Atletico Madrid 4. And then here's where it got really difficult. I struggled to find real wiggle room between City and United. So when we're City 2, United 3, because Manchester City beat them in the cup, And then Glasgow Rangers. I had Glasgow Rangers in the two last week, thinking, well, Bayern will give me a couple of weeks to figure out what I'm going to do at Glasgow Rangers long term. Then Bayern lose two on the spin, and I'm having to put Glasgow Rangers in at number one. And I'm not sure how they got there. I do, but it's Scottish football.
Yep.
You know, so help me out.
You used the word struggle there, Shaq. I think your explanation is struggling a little bit. Ale, where did he struggle the most?
Waking up this morning? Honestly, when you ask Shaka, why is Glasgow Rangers number one? And his answer is, I don't know. That in itself sums up how much work Shaka Hislop puts into this. He doesn't know. And his explanation was because it's football. Because it's football,
hold on.
That's why Glasgow Rangers is number one. That was his explanation.
Here's my issue. Glasgow Rangers have lost once since August. But, you know, what the level of the competition, and this is including Europa League, granted, but they've not played in any European action, obviously, since when it was with December. But it's just going undefeated even this long in Scotland. They've only dropped 4 points in the league, but how highly do I rank Scottish football against everybody else? And that's my big
challenge. Very high, apparently. Very high.
Ian, Rangers, the best team in the world. Your thoughts?
I don't know about the best team in the world. I'm not even sure the Rangers fans would say that. But I'll tell you something. Steven Gerrard's doing a really great job there. I mean, they're so far clear now that you need a telescope to see the rest. I mean, this was the year that Celtic were thinking they were going to win it, I think, 10 times in a row. So that's not going to happen this time, even though they've got a load of games in hand. So I'm not going to argue with Shaka if he wants to put Rangers at number one. It is a bit fresh. It is a bit different. Mind you, Manchester City, 14 unbeaten. And Manchester United, I think, I worked it out today, they've got 29 points out of the last 33. So they'd have their arguments as well. But who are we to argue with Shaka's power rankings?
Very well.
Well, I tell you what.
I agree, Ian.
If he's putting in Glasgow Rangers, if he's putting in all these other teams and Besiktas and so on and so forth and finer, hey, how about a little bit of love to a South American club? How about the clubs that made it into the Copa Libertadores finals? That are actually about to win a significant trophy. How about we hit up Santos or we hit up Palmeiras? Maybe we go in that direction. Since we're saying it's football, okay, give some love to South America as well, Shaka. All inclusive, baby.
Full Libertadores breakdown coming up on today's edition of Extra Time. Shaka will tell us all that we need to know about the All-Brazilian final.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, then, that'll do it for today's edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to Frank LaBeouf and Julian Laurent for joining us. Right now, what you've been waiting for, Extra Time. Ian Dark, Shaka Hislop, and Ale Moreno. Enjoy. Greetings. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Got your questions straight off of Twitter, and we've got quite the trio to take them today. Ian, Shaka.
Greetings. Whatever happened to, hey there, everybody. Where you got this greetings from?
Shaka, when you start to answer a question, I'm just going to cut off the next time I don't like how you're starting
Shaq.
It.
I'm lost.
Hey there,
where
buddy.
Am I?
Come on now.
You're on extra time, Shaka. Frank McManaman, our first tweeter, says, how tough is it for players to buy into playing styles that they may not agree with? We've talked about this a little bit on the show. Can't imagine Harry Kane, Heung-Min Son enjoying Mourinho's tactics. Ale, what do you think?
It's tough when you think as a player that you've had success in the past doing things differently. And in comes a new manager, and I'm not referencing Mourinho in particular, but any new manager that comes in and tries to change the way that you've done things for years and things that have worked for you. As a player, you get used to certain things and certain levels of comfort in terms of what works for you on the field, what kind of routine works for you. When in comes a manager says, no, you know what, all those things that you've been successful with, you're going to do it differently now, and you don't see results right away as a player, then of course it is difficult. And most players are reticent to really taking that step forward and that leap of faith with a new coach unless they trust what this guy is saying.
Saw this in the Spurs Fulham match the other day. Dan the Orange Man tweets, what are your thoughts on Eric Dier dragging himself back onto the pitch for treatment after picking up an injury just to stop the game? What's the craziest time-wasting method you've ever seen used? Ian, you've watched a lot of football in your day. What's the craziest time-wasting you've seen?
The craziest time-wasting? Oh.
Aside from you trying to answer this question.
A lot of it quite legitimate, really, from teams who are probably 1-0 up away from home. You know, you've seen goalkeepers. I remember seeing a goalkeeper wander behind the goal. Shaka will understand this one. They were 1-0 up, and the ball boy was trying to give him the ball back, and he kept saying to the ball boy, drop it. Drop that ball. Drop it. Kick it away. And this went on for about 3 minutes, and they ate up a lot of time, and they held on for the 1-0 win. But this poor little ball boy was looking at the goalkeeper and saying, why are you telling me that? Why don't you want the ball? He said, no, I don't want the ball. I don't want the ball. That was one of the funniest.
Shaka, goalies the best, or should we say worst time wasters?
I don't know where we fall. I will freely admit, though, that during the course of my career, I developed, when we were up late in the game, I developed a run to retrieve the ball where my arms and legs were moving really quickly, but I was covering zero ground. It was great. Referees didn't know what was going on. So where does that fall in your little scale of best or worst? I don't know.
Yep. Ale,
I do remember in World Cup qualifiers in South America, Chile playing against Brazil, and the goalkeeper for Chile, El Condor Rojas, actually cut himself, had some sort of cutting device or tool next to the goal, cut himself, and because he did that and faked as if something had been thrown from the stands, then the game was abandoned, and at some point Brazil was in jeopardy of not making it to the World Cup. Then the whole scheme came out, and El Condor Rojas, of course, was pointed at and persecuted because of it. But it was a real issue where Brazil and Chile had to abandon the game because of the things that apparently had been thrown from the stands, and indeed it was just the goalkeeper cutting himself. That's one way of wasting time. You just had to go and cut yourself on the field.
Ale, that was qualifying for the 90 World Cup? 94 World Cup? Which one was it?
Yeah, it's for the 90 World Cup, I believe.
Yeah. Shaka?
I remember. Mm-hmm. I think somebody threw a flare on the field that landed next to him, and then all of a sudden he's bleeding profusely from his hand, and only when they reviewed the tape, they realized that the flare fell 4 feet away from him, never touched him, never came any closer to him than that. Mm. And that he was faking. Oh, he cut himself.
Yeah. It wasn't the tape, it was a photograph from a Brazilian like press photographer that actually caught the moment. Hmm. ESPN did like a 30 for 30 podcast on it, Fall of the Condor. Very, 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 very good. Very well done. Ian, which Premier League team has a chance to make the top four that you didn't think had a chance, / nobody is really talking about? Any dark horse top four teams for you?
Well, I mean, I think Everton have got a chance, and I don't think many people, apart from Carlo Ancelotti and the Toffees fans, would have said so at the start of the season, they've got a chance of making the top four. I think Southampton have got a bit of a squeak of doing it this season, and maybe Aston Villa as well, because although they're not in the top six at the moment, they've got two games in hand. So when they get everybody healthy again, they've had an outbreak of COVID in the camp, they could be involved as well. Basically, anything could happen because it's a scary and very unpredictable year.
All right. Question for Ale. What does Inter need to do to beat Juventus on Sunday? And what is your prediction?
Inter, over the last few years, and not only in Serie A, but also in Champions League as well, they've had moments like this where they can really, really, truly take a step forward. And in most of those occasions, they've taken a step back. At some point, Antonio Conte and this very talented, allegedly talented Inter team, they have to stand up. And never mind the tactics, never mind the passing of the ball and the movement and the tactics. How about showing some character, strength of character? So if I were Inter, if there was one thing that you have to have against Juventus this weekend, it's a sense of belief and a strength of character to go and fight against Juventus and say, yeah, we're here to win this thing. If you don't believe you can beat Juventus, then you have no opportunity to do so. Juventus is right there for the taking. It's a team that's struggling. Finding consistency hasn't been the strength of this team throughout the course of the year. If there was ever a moment, this is it for Inter.
Inter second, Juve fourth heading into that match on Sunday. For each of the pundits, Shaq, I'll start with you. Who was the best coach that you played under?
The best coach I played under, Leo Benacca for Trinidad Tobago, formerly of course of Real Madrid. And Leo was the best communicator in terms of manager or head coach I played under. He knew what he wanted and he knew how to get his teams to play that. And I think that's a skill that not many have, or certainly nowhere near as well as Leo was able to get his ideas across to us.
Shaka, did he want to start you at the World Cup?
No. I the only time I started under Leo Benacca, and rightly so, I'll add, was against Sweden. Calvin Jack had been the preferred number one even before Leo took over, and Calvin performed wonderfully well throughout the qualifiers. I was down the pecking order. But then Calvin picked up a knock in one of the pre-tournament games, and I was carded to be on the bench, and in the warm-up Kelvin couldn't realize he couldn't continue, and that's when I got the nod.
Very good. Final question here. In light of the news of James Harden being traded, were you ever at a club where a player's demand for a transfer made the dressing room uncomfortable or caused any internal strife? Did you ever talk to a player or just mind your own business? Ale, you first. Any stories of locker room strife?
There are guys that walk into the locker room, and the moment they walk in, you get a sense that this guy is just gonna create issues. It's gonna be a problem. And I don't wanna name names, but there was a guy at one point in one of the many locker rooms that I was a part of. This guy would walk into the locker room with a bag full of McDonald's breakfast. Now, look, I don't mind people eating fast food, but that's not exactly the best preparation to go and play. Now, he would show up with this breakfast after he had been absent for days because he had gone home and visited his family for what was supposed to be a weekend and ended up being a week. When as a coach or as an organization, you allow those things to happen, then within the locker room, anything that he does is going to create a problem. And eventually it became an untenable situation, and the club had to move away from the player.
Shaka, any stories of a guy that just wanted to get out and was content to make everybody else's life miserable?
I can't think of any that had that kind of an impact on all dressing rooms. At any point in a football club, somebody wants out, and you know, for whatever reason, and try to force that issue through, but kind of comes with the territory, and you don't pay those players too much mind, in all honesty.
Ian, what's the worst transfer story you've heard?
Just going back to what the guys were talking about there, I mean, I didn't play professionally, of course. I was just a keen amateur player. But I actually got to play one day. I talk about dressing room strife. We played at Wembley, an empty Wembley, in a media game as the forerunner to an auto glass final. And you'll never guess this, but the guy, I was working for a company called Sky Sports at the time in England, and the guys from the BBC who were in the team as well with us would not talk to us because we were rival broadcasters. So they were on the same team as us. So we never spoke to the BBC TV guys ahead of this game at Wembley, and we were all on the same team. So, yeah, we only had one game, and we got it wrong.
There you go. Some rivalries never go out of style. Somebody get that phone in the background, whoever that was. That's it for today's edition of Extra Time.
I can tell you, Seb, that there was a scramble in the house to get the phone. I could sense that there was a real, real change of pace.
That's right.
I believe from my wife, who might have tripped getting to the phone.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. I'll have to confirm that at some other point at FC later this week.
Either way, we certainly appreciate
Beth, please, let us know.
The urgency. For Ale, Shock, a couple of pros, and one keen amateur, Ian Dark. I'm Seb. Thanks for watching. We'll see you tomorrow.